favorite Tim Raines story? Well, just the one that I always remember is we talked about life in the fast lane. It's just how far he's come from the time that we were standing together on his birthday in 1982 at the end of the Expos dugout on the first base side. And, you know, he was lamenting the fact that the story had come out in the Toronto Star about his drug issues. And from that moment, and that's a moment I always remember because it was, it was a guy in so much pain. And then the way that he bounced back from it, the way that he went to the rehab center in Orange County, California. Mike Farber went down and did a piece that closed the door on it, and it was a very sensitive, well-done piece, and how he rebounded to become a Hall of Fame player.
The toughest thing I had to do was call my parents and tell them I had a drug problem because they knew that wasn't me. And to tell them that I was going to rehab to be in a program for 37 days out in California, you know, and I had to go alone. That was probably one of the toughest phone calls I ever made. I remember, you know, giving much nicer phone calls, man. I'm going to the major leagues, or, you know, I hit my first homer, or, you know, I stole my first base.
Welcome back. It is hour number four, the Irish Embassy pregame portion of Melnick in the Afternoon on TSN 690. Tim Raines with us about 90 minutes ago. The book was launched here yesterday, Rock Solid, My Life in Baseball's Fast Lane. Before that, Rich Griffin 2 hours ago from Camden Yards. During the Blue Jays season opener against the Orioles, they are tied at 2. The Orioles have the winning run on in the bottom of the ninth. We'll keep you posted. It's a pleasure to welcome back to the show the aforementioned National Newspaper Award winner for that piece on Tim Raines, just off the set of the reporters in Toronto. How are you, Michael Farber?
Well, Mitch, how are you? Actually, the show tonight is 8 o'clock.
Oh.
We're different time.
Okay,
so,
totally confused.
You know, if you can turn away from the Canadiens and want to get ready for Gonzaga, North Carolina, turn on TSN. We're on one of the five. I can't tell you which, but we're on.
TSN reporters, Farber, Simmons, Arthur, Dave Hodge, 8 o'clock tonight. Okay. Do you want to offer a postscript to Raines, the fact that he's just spent 5 days back here?
Yeah, it's so nice to see him and watching him on the field with those guys. I realized how old we've all gotten.
Yep.
And these were young men. These were wonderful young players. Watching Al Oliver, you know, I'm thinking of him hitting line drive after line drive and, you know, Rock stealing bases and Steve Rogers before his hair turned white. And it was a reminder how old we've all become and how important those times were in Montreal and how baseball wasn't the first bloom. The franchise had been there for a decade, but this was the first time it was really good and really fun. And as you well know, it was more important for that period of time than the Montreal Canadiens.
Yep.
And it was an electric place, and it was ours. It was Mickey Mouse, but it was our Mickey Mouse. So oompah bands and scoreboard chickens. And Tim Raines was part of that. If you look at the scope of the Expos history, Tim Raines played with the first star in the team history, Rusty Staub, in 1979. The Expos reacquired Staub, and that was the year Tim Raines came up as a pinch runner in September. And, of course, he played with the last star in a final salute in Montreal. Tim Raines was back playing with Vladimir Guerrero. So Tim Raines is the connective tissue, the history of the franchise, and it was great covering him and great seeing him on the weekend.
Pacioretty gets it back. Tried to get it through to Radulov. He does. He fires and he scores. And Alex Radulov may have just driven a stake through the hearts of the Tampa Bay Lightning. He didn't get it all, but he got enough, and Montreal wins it 2-1 in overtime.
So they got that top line moving again, Radulov, Pacioretty, and Deneau. The Lightning did bounce back. It might be an important lost point, but they did beat Dallas yesterday, so they're still in it. As the Canadians play out the string, looks like without Shea Weber, he's home now for at least the next couple of games. And the question is, does anybody get in the way of the Rangers and the Montreal Canadiens at this point? It certainly doesn't appear that's going to happen.
I think they're pretty well locked in.
Yep.
I don't see anybody in the East right now, in the Atlantic, threatening Montreal's position. That seems pretty safe with the remaining games. Tampa might be an interesting game on Friday night. But yeah, this is going to be the Chris Kreider revenge tour part two. A lot of people are going to be keeping an eye on Chris Kreider. He Kreiderized Carey Price, and maybe Montreal gets back into the Stanley Cup final, although Tokarski played as well as he could possibly play. So yeah, it's a series to look forward to. Lundqvist hasn't been especially sharp. Recently, he's been pulled from a bunch of games. Rick Nash is not having a great season, but the Rangers seem to find a way. Vigneault, we know, is a terrific coach. It's an intriguing series. You and I agree. It's a toss-up series. Montreal, the problems remain. Are they going to get enough scoring? Are they going to get enough secondary scoring? And my sense is they might. They might. Gallagher's revival has kind of changed my thoughts on that. I mean, that looks like a pretty good line now. And so Plek is better, and you just think, well, maybe it's all going to work together. And Gallagher is the key. If he can pester Lundqvist, if he keeps going in the net and, you know, keeps paying off, yeah, I think the scoring might not be as big a problem as I've assumed it would be pretty much all year.
Yeah. And the Galchenyuk right now is the guy that really got to get going. But as you project ahead, and, you know, one of the most intriguing storylines once the playoffs start is, you know, the Capitals, here we go again, right? Could you, if you polled the guys and they answered honestly, is there a team they wouldn't want to face? Would it be Tampa?
I don't know. I wouldn't want to play Pittsburgh, as banged up as they've been. I wouldn't want to play Washington. You know, Washington, it's one of these years, it's going to be the Capitals' time. I mean, you look at that team, they've done everything. Again, another well-coached team. Nick Backstrom is a great two-way player. I mean, a great two-way player. And that Oshie Backstrom Ovechkin line, you know, is really good. They played Ovechkin roughly 2 minutes fewer per game. And if you add it up over the course of the season, that's about eight games or so less of ice time than he's had in the past. And that's significant. So his numbers might be down, but there's a reason for that. So you have this team that has depth. It's an older team. It's been steeled by playoff disappointment. It's got a first-rate goaltender in Braden Holtby. They made the addition with Shattenkirk. I wouldn't want to play Washington at all.
Yeah.
If he doesn't make a deal, we have the potential for chaos. Absolute, total chaos. And a lot of acrimony between players and owners, where some owners will say, yes, you can go with our blessing, and other owners say, we prohibit you from going. That's chaos.
Gary Bettman's good buddy, Alan Walsh of Octagon Hockey Los Angeles, four days ago on this very show, as we were trying to figure out, you know, when we were going to get a definitive statement one way or the other. It came down during the show today. I think everybody knows by now that the NHL has said no and the matter is closed. Do you believe the matter is entirely closed here?
Oh, I think there's a crack that's open. Hockey Canada just said we've got a plan A and a plan B, but right now we're focused on the World Championships. And we'll visit after that. I believe it is the league's intention not to go. I mean, we're at the 11th hour and 59th minute, but something can still happen. And I have been an optimist right from the start for reasons that Alan Walsh has laid out quite graphically. Because what do you do if, say, the Washington Capitals say, no problem, Ovi, have a good time. Nick Backstrom, yeah, you want to play for Sweden after that disappointment a couple of years ago in Sochi. We're going to let you go. What does that do to the integrity of the game? If they have to play Team A, say the New York Rangers, without Ovechkin, without Backstrom, and then have to play Team B, say the Islanders, with those guys, that's affecting the integrity of the game. Now, I can't believe that the NHL hasn't planned for this already. I spoke to Ted Leonsis, about 10 days ago. He refused to comment further and just said, no, we'll leave this in the hands of the league. I don't know if that was his own decision or whether the league has advised him not to talk further about it.
Because it was Ted Leonsis who actually...
protocol.
Yeah, sorry, Michael, I should point out for those who might not be aware, is Ted Leonsis was supportive, right, of Alex Ovechkin's desire to play.
The best information that I've been able to cobble together, even though the NHL in its statement said the league owners were overwhelmingly in favor of not going, that it was really about 17 or 18 to 13 or so. That's not solid. I don't have multiple sources on that, but that's the best that I can figure out. So yeah, while it was in favor, and it's a shame because Ed Snyder was one who favored the Olympics, and I believe Mike Ilitch was as well. The curious thing is today, while rummaging around, looking up things from the 2006 Olympics, you know, with Finland beating Canada in the women's worlds, and in those Olympics, Sweden beat the USA. I was looking at some stuff, and I came across a story I did in which NHL owners, this goes back to Turin, we're talking about, Vancouver will probably be the last time because we have a friendly time zone. This will be the end of our Olympic participation. So in 06, they were already grumbling about not liking the Olympics. Remember, Dominic Hasek got injured, might have cost Ottawa a Stanley Cup that year. There were lots of injuries. In 2014, we saw John Tavares hurt. There's been a lot of negative stuff. I think the big negative from the owner's perspective is the league has never been able to monetize this. They've never figured out a way to make money, and that's what it's about. And if anyone ever had any doubt who Gary Bettman's constituents are, it's not hockey fans. He's not commissioner of the game. He's the commissioner of the league and 30, now 31 teams. And those are the guys that he works for, and that's where it's going to go. So when we talk about the best interests of hockey, it's not best interests of hockey, it's the best interests in the NHL, and this just underscores it.
I'm reading stuff now that is actually humorous. For instance, documenting injuries that happen to NHL players in the Olympics, but not documenting injuries that happen to players in the World Cup of Hockey? Please, have some credibility when you do some of these things.
Good point, as usual, Pierre McGuire. Don't insult the intelligence of people who support you as a league by pointing out guys getting hurt, because then we'll never have any kind of international event if you're always worried about guys getting hurt.
But if the NHL controls it, as they do the World Cup, and clearly they would put on a better World Cup than they did the last time, wouldn't be so jokey or fluky, and wouldn't have Team Europe and wouldn't have Team North America as appealing as that young team was. Once you can control the purse strings and once you come up with something, then maybe you're in business. To put it in a different context, this is repeal and replace. We're going to repeal our Olympic involvement, and we're going to replace it with this wonderful World Cup of hockey. So that's
how's
what
that
we're
going?
Looking at.
How's that going down south?
Yeah, not so good.
Yeah. All right, final one. It's Masters Week, of course, yesterday.
What I learned most? You know, I learned a lot about myself and how much fight I do have in me. I don't know, every day is a learning process, and I wasn't expecting what happened today, but it is what it is, it happens, and I'll learn from it and hopefully do better.
Four-shot penalty for Lexi Thompson because somebody was watching on TV and complained about how she placed the golf ball from the day before, right?
Yeah. Yeah, I've seen that before, actually. I was down taking a day off from spring training in 1991, went down to Doral to write a column about that, and Paul Azinger on the Friday was disqualified for moving a stone in the water hazard on the famous 18th hole at Doral. And again, this was phoned in by a viewer, and he not only had a two-stroke penalty, but because the rules at the time where he signed an incorrect scorecard, he was disqualified because he didn't include the penalty. I mean, really, do we need this kind of snooping? They have rules officials on the courses. There should be a statute of limitations And good for Lexi Thompson to battle back from what amounted to a 4-stroke penalty, 2 for marking her ball incorrectly by about an inch and on a tap-in putt, and also for signing an incorrect scorecard, which is now a 2-stroke penalty. But golf, the Royal and Ancient and the USGA are revising the rule book, and I think that's for 2019, and maybe it'll be simpler. I have in my possession a USGA rules and decisions book from, I believe it's 2012, 2013. You know how many pages are in that?
I'm afraid to
ask. 600 plus.
That's why I don't golf, Michael.
No,
way too many rules. Way too many rules.
It's complicated, and it's needlessly complicated, but I get it. It's just a horrible thing.
Sports reporters on TSN, 8 p.m. tonight with Dave Hodge and the gang, Michael Farber, Bruce Arthur, and Steve Simmons, and we'll talk to you next Monday.
Okay.
Always a pleasure.
I think a lot of people are proud of you. How proud are you yourself?
I am proud. Just the way I played coming in. I am a very emotional person, and I fought strong, and that's all I could do.